It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. My co-host Veronica Rickard is off this week. Coming up on Central Time, a recent New York Times report says that Governor Walker is changing his accent as he prepares a likely bid for the presidency. We'll hear what you think and what a Wisconsin accent really sounds like. First, Indiana has gotten a lot of heat since Governor Mike Pence signed the state's Religious Freedom Restoration Act into law last week. Critics of the law say it was crafted to allow businesses to discriminate against the LGBT community. Those who support the law deny those accusations. They say it mimics laws in other states and federal law. Since the Indiana governor signed the law, business leaders and politicians around the country have announced sanctions against the state. Indianapolis-based Angie's List said it's canceling a $40 million expansion in the city. CEOs of Apple and Yelp have written opposition articles, and mayors of cities like San Francisco and Seattle have banned city-funded travel to Indiana. Governor Pence went on This Week with George Stephanopoulos on Sunday to defend the law. He declined to say whether it allowed for-profit businesses to discriminate against gay people. Here's a clip from that interview.
Yes or no? If a florist in Indiana refuses to serve a gay couple at their wedding, is that legal now in Indiana?
George, this is where this debate has gone with misinformation and frankly,
it's just a question, sir. Yes or no?
Well, there's been shameless rhetoric about my state and about this law and about its intention all over the internet. People are trying to make it about one particular issue, and now you're doing that as well.
Here with us now to talk about this law in Indiana is Kimmy King. She's professor of political science at the University of North Texas and Central Times legal affairs correspondent. Kimmy, good to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you.
Let's pick up that conversation between George Stephanopoulos and Governor Pence. Having looked at this law, would the situation be as Stephanopoulos is describing? Could private businesses discriminate against gay people under this new law?
It certainly is the case that with the new law, they have additional legal fodder for making the argument that they were not required to serve that couple. But it's also a function of the Burwell Hobby Lobby case, which came down, which said that employers, private employers, have the ability to restrict or to prevent, you know, prohibit providing health care, birth control, to persons for religious reasons. So between both the Indiana ordinance and previous Supreme Court precedent, you have an ability to make a much stronger case than you would have otherwise had.
Now, I've seen a real split in what people are saying and writing about this Indiana law. On one hand, people are saying, hey, 19 other states have what are called Religious Freedom Restoration Acts in place. So does the federal government. Same thing in Indiana. Other people are saying, no, there are small but very important distinctions in this Indiana law that make it functionally different. Where do you come down on that, or what do you see as the arguments on both sides there?
I think that the key issue is then what is the intent of the state in passing the law, and that certainly would be something that they look at as, you know, if and when, and I think it will be a when, a case is brought regarding this kind of issue. They will look to see what was the intent of the legislators. Were they looking to single out or target specific groups, specifically LGBT groups? Was it that they were trying to target that group, or is it more that they are trying to protect the religious freedom? So one sharp distinction that's been pointed out is that if you go back and look at when other states have passed their RFRAs or their Religious Freedom Restoration Act laws, to give those with religious beliefs greater support for making those arguments in court, making it more difficult for the government to interfere with your religious beliefs, the LGBT issue and gay marriage in particular was not tied into it. So that's one important distinction. The second distinction, and I'm always amazed at the extent to which, you know, the Midwestern states like Wisconsin or Indiana are really lockstep with some of our southern states like Texas, is that the Indiana law allows private individuals to be involved in these lawsuits, as does the Texas law, whereas other RFRAs say we're trying to leave it in the hands of government and to see to it that government is not targeting you for your religious beliefs. But Indiana seems to have opened up the door a little bit more through the way in which this law is written, allowing private individuals that opportunity to be able to challenge state policies. And I think all of this is must be cast against the backdrop because the Supreme Court is about to hear the gay marriage case, and everybody has been discussing that. And so I think that's another issue and another reason why this case is kind of riveting the national attention, because everyone is anticipating what is going to be probably the most important decision of the court's term and the oral arguments that are going to be heard this next month.
Talking to Central Time Legal Affairs correspondent Kimmy King about the controversial Indiana religious freedom law passed last week. A lot of backlash against that around the country since then. And Kimmy, it's interesting how these religious freedom restoration acts have morphed. As I understand it, when they were passed, it was to protect things like a Native American sacred site from having a highway built through it, a Muslim prison guard being allowed to have some facial hair, not having that restricted, that kind of thing. It's really been morphing, hasn't it?
Yes, although in fairness to those that are supportive of the law, understand that laws always morph. And this idea that there is this thing of the law is really just a misnomer. And so I think you'll see across society, if you look, for example, going back to even interracial marriage and the first arguments that came out about that, understand that everyone always takes any kind of new law and uses it for its own purposes. So it is absolutely the case that these laws have morphed, and it is absolutely the case that people are increasingly challenging them, whether it's a baker in New Mexico or a florist in Washington or wherever it is. People have consistently been using laws to promote some kind of social change, either to the left or to the right. And what you're seeing here is the use of the law to promote social change to swing back toward a more conservative perspective.
What an interesting twist on what's happened in Indiana is, outside the legal side of it, the political and the economic response. Are you surprised to see companies based in Indiana, based elsewhere, reacting so strongly against this new law?
I'll be quite candid. I'm actually rather surprised that the governor has taken so much heat and stood up for it in a way that, for example, you saw Governor Jan Brewer in Arizona when they had a similar law raised there that she vetoed it because she said it would be disastrous for business. So I think one of the things that's surprising is that the governor has been willing to take the heat in the face of this economic hardship that will and is already being visited along, on the state. What will be striking is to see the extent to which Indiana responds in 3 months or in 6 months, because you will see not only the pressure coming from economic business being lost, but then they're going to be facing litigation and lawsuits as a result of the law. And those two factors together may get the legislature and the governor to change their mind.
Is there kind of a perfect storm here? You mentioned the Supreme Court case coming up, the presidential race, and the governor of Indiana has been mentioned as a possibility. The Final Four going on next weekend in Indianapolis. Maybe this is getting more attention than it would have been at some hypothetical, probably non-existent neutral time.
I think putting it as a perfect storm is a great way to put it. In general, I would say this issue is on the agenda and has been for the last 2 to 3 years in ways that, quite honestly, and I've said this before, going back a decade, no one anticipated. I think an additional part of that perfect storm is that there has been a sea change in the collective perspective on gay marriage and this attitude. And once you saw moderate to conservative Republicans come out in support of gay marriage, the tide began to shift, and we're still in that phase where it's almost like the waves are coming up on the beach, and they're just getting stronger, and they're going to continue until the Supreme Court finally resolves this issue about can the states ban gay marriage.
We're talking with Central Time legal affairs correspondent Kimmy King of the University of North Texas, looking at Indiana's Religious Freedom Restoration Act. We'd like to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Are you following this story? What do you think about this new law? If you support it, do you think clarifications need to be made, as the governor of Indiana has mentioned? In 2013, Wisconsin lawmakers introduced a similar constitutional amendment. Do we need something like that here? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're continuing our conversation with Kimmy King from the University of North Texas, talking about Indiana's Religious Freedom Restoration Act. It changes the laws in that state. Critics say it is legalizing discrimination, especially against lesbians and gays in Indiana. So we're just saying, no, this is an attempt to protect religious liberty for individuals, for business owners and others. You can call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What do you think about this law and the idea behind it? If you support it, do you think it needs to be clarified given all the backlash against it? Would you support something like this here in Wisconsin? Call 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go right to a caller. We've got Sean on the line in Wausau. Sean, hi.
Hey, Rob, Veronica, Kimmy, thanks for taking my call.
What do you think of this, Sean?
I'm just wondering, does this religious protection, does it extend to all religions, or is it just for mainstream Christian denominations? I mean, could a business owner who happened to be a member of the Nation of Islam say, I'm no longer going to be serving white devils in my business because my religious beliefs say I don't have to? Or, I mean, where does it end? I mean, if you're going to allow everyone to say, well, this is my religious belief, and therefore I'm just going to discriminate against this whole section of society.
Sean, thanks a lot for the call. Kimmy, I assume the law doesn't specify a particular religion, but could this be tested in ways like Sean was talking about?
It absolutely could be tested in ways that he is raising, although it will depend upon the particular state in question. So a couple things to get at. One is that if we look at the First Amendment, we need to think of it in two parts. The part of it that says government can't establish a religion, that's the Establishment Clause, and then the fact that government's not supposed to interfere with the free exercise of your religion. So this clearly falls down on the free exercise side of it. What is striking when you look at the history of the free exercise clause is that it has been used to protect those persons who are typically of a minority religion. And so, for example, it's been used to say that the Amish, for example, can take their children out of the public schools in eighth grade because at that point they need to be more focused on working in the fields and becoming indoctrinated into their community through their belief systems. So when we think of the Free Exercise Clause, it has largely protected minority religions. And what is also striking about this Indiana law is it's not even identifying the LGBT issue, right? Mm-hmm. And so it just simply gives you almost permission to say that if there are things that are at odds with your religious beliefs, that the government cannot force you to do it unless, and here's a key point I want to follow up with on the caller, unless government has a compelling government interest. And so to the extent that a restaurant doesn't want to serve white devils, as the caller pointed out, that gets at a racial bias, which is prohibited by the 14th Amendment. And so the government probably wouldn't have a hard time. It'd be a little easier for them to show that we have a compelling government interest in seeing to it that people are not racially discriminated against. But it does open up the possibility of unique legal challenges because it provides individuals with unique religious beliefs to assert those religious beliefs as reasons for why they're discriminating.
Sean, thanks a lot for the call. We'll go next to Barb in Chippewa Falls. Barb, hi.
Hello. Thank you for having this program. I will state that I don't agree with the legislation, and I will kind of piggyback off the previous caller. My concern is I don't understand I've seen Governor Pence try to clarify, and that there was no clarification for me. And I thought he was referring to maybe rewording the legislation or something, but I don't see how any, even an amendment, say that, you know, protects gays and lesbians. I am not sure, given how he is, you know, kind of doubling down and going to stay with this and try to clarify it. I don't see how this isn't an incredible slippery slope, like the former caller said. Where does it end? And so that is my comment. And I will also ask your guest if there is any amendment that she could see that would, you know, that would reduce the backlash, I guess, against this.
Barb, thanks for the call. Kimmy, is there something they could tweak here that might satisfy the people who are currently threatening effectively boycotts here?
Well, I think that it's not politically likely. There is that possibility. And so, for example, if you have a number of religious freedom states that have non-discrimination laws put in place statewide, Connecticut, Illinois, New Mexico, and Rhode Island, so if the governor were to try to court business back, he could say, we'll try to pass legislation that protects, you know, LGBT persons from being discriminated against. I don't think that's politically likely, given when you look at the legislative intent and the history behind that RFRA law. But that is one way in which you might try to limit some of that backlash, as it were. I think that the most powerful tool that the general public will have will be the boycott of Indiana business and the travel of business and tourism to the state. You've already seen, I believe it's out in California, refusing to pay for people to fly out to do business in Indiana if necessary on the state's dime. So you're going to start seeing other public entities take that perspective, and I think that is really the biggest, that will have the biggest kind of influence on the politics there.
We're talking to Central Time legal affairs correspondent Kimmy King about the controversial Indiana religious freedom law that's in the news big time this last week. We'll go to a caller now. We've got Brian with us in Fond du Lac. Brian, hi.
Yeah, I had a couple of comments and a question. First of all, this bill may have had a little bit more traction for some of the people in the public in the time of extreme economic difficulty. Now the economy is coming back. There's a less of a need, I think, on the part of people to scapegoat a particular group. And this is a sociological principle that goes way back to the days of Hitler. I mean, the separated Jewish communities and even some caused themselves a great deal of pain because they weren't allowed to be integrated into the German society. Second comment that I wanted to make was that if you, or a question rather, was if this is by intent a discriminatory law, by definition it is, who is being discriminated against if Mike Pence has been backwalking it, saying he had no intentions of it being discriminatory against gays?
Brian, thanks a lot for the call. So even if the spelled out intent of the law isn't discriminatory, I guess, is it possible that it could be, Kimmy?
Yeah, so every law, when you look at it, you can look at the law on its face and you can look at it as applied. And so on its face, it's not targeting LGBT groups. I mean, one of the things that this is very similar to is going back to something that happened in Colorado back in the mid-1990s, and that is they were trying to stem the tide of local municipalities that were extending rights and privileges that prohibited discrimination against LGBT persons in the provision of local jobs, local employment, local housing, that sort of thing. So the state of Colorado passed a statewide amendment that said local municipalities don't get to make determinations about this discrimination. We do, and any of those laws are null and void. Well, it went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, state government, you don't get to decide to do these things as well. So what you really see in essence is this kind of power shift as cases work their way through the courts, and how you see the discrimination may depend upon the perspective that you take. For example, the reason why this RFRA law has been put forward is because it's the idea is that you're trying to make it so that if government is forcing you to do something, they better have a really good, a compelling government reason if they're going to try to substantially burden your religious belief. And so the argument that was put forward when the legislation was proffered was that we're trying to protect and keep from those with religious beliefs from being discriminated against. The difficulty gets into how do you allow those kinds of cases to be brought, and where Indiana's law is a little unique is it's not reaching out and saying, look, if you're a minister and it's at odds with the tenets of your religion to marry a gay couple in your church, we can give you an exemption under that RFRA law, because now you're getting at, we don't want your religious beliefs to be interfered with, as opposed to someone can just provide any reason for why it is that they are needing to discriminate against any group. And that's where I think the Indiana law may get into a little bit more trouble.
We'll be watching this as it comes into effect. Kimmy, thanks as always for joining us.
You betcha. You take care out there, folks.
Thanks. That was Kimmy King, professor of political science at the University of North Texas and Central Time legal affairs correspondent, talking about Indiana's new Religious Freedom Restoration Act.